Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to a special episode of the Acme Packing Company podcast. I'm joined here by Evan Tex Western. Say what's up, people, Tex.
Hey, it's been a while. Hope everybody's summer's going well.
It's going well on my end. I drank beige colored water earlier by accident because I drink water. Did you see that in the APC Slack? I posted it.
I missed that.
So they're doing pipe work by my house that I'm renting. I don't own a damn house, but by where I sleep. And I didn't realize this until probably like 5:30 today. I'd gone for multiple swigs of water at this point, as one would imagine. I drink water out of the faucet like a dog. Like I just like water fountain, right? I didn't realize until my girlfriend got home and I was like, we should make some tea, that the water was beige. And I was like, oh, that's not good. But no boil warning. Didn't have any taste. I'm hoping it's just some lead and I just like microdosed being a boomer or something.
Well, look, I mean, I've been known to drink beige colored liquids, but that's at least intended to be.
Yeah, yours have a kick, though. I think mine have the wrong type of kick.
Yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, that's
so
that's
other than that, it's been nice. The summer actually finally started in the Pacific Northwest. It was 70 and rainy up until this past week, and now it just immediately goes into 100 degrees. It's like, okay. Yeah. So it's wedding season on my end. Gotta hit a wedding like every weekend now. So
there you go. Yeah, you're still at that age where they're still happening.
Happening with intensity. Between it's like the pandemic delaying weddings. Mm-hmm. And then the people who got married or got engaged during the pandemic, and they were like, we already just spent like 2 years locked inside with each other. We might as well make this official. So yeah, it's just high volume. We have weddings that are planned next year, even, because like I know like my girlfriend's sister, like they couldn't get a venue like in Hood River where we grew up. Like they couldn't get a venue for a whole year. It was like, okay. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, we're my fiance and I are getting married next summer, but we planned it that way. We wanted a whole, like, it's a 2 year thing. We want a lot of time to plan. It's going to be a destination thing. So, we're going way out and into like right before football season next year is when it's happening. So it'll be good. It'll be good.
Well, I got you covered. Hopefully, I knock out these weddings, so have a little bit more free time to cover you next year. So we wanted to have this podcast because we just ran our yearly top plays. So we got the top 10 plays of 2021 up on the site. We've been dropping one per weekday is kind of how we've done it. Tex, do you kind of want to explain the methodology that we have?
Yeah, definitely. So every year we've done this and we'll have everybody on staff at Acme Packing Company vote for our individual top 10s. Voting criteria basically is it's kind of our favorite plays for whatever that means to everybody. So that could relate to an individually excellent play by somebody, something that has a really major impact on a particular game or the season as a whole. Or just something that we found absolutely friggin' hilarious. And all those things kind of play into it. And so each of the writers put our own top 10s together. We compile those, rank them 1 through 10, and then put a consensus or compiled rankings together for all of us and rank our overall top 10 for the blog. And this year we ended up having 11 because there was a tie for the 10th spot. And so we'll touch on two plays at number 10. But I think we had seven or eight of us that put in our votes this year. And we had some good ones to pick from this season.
I love this. I think this was like one of the first projects I worked on last year.
Yep.
When I got hired. And I was like, this is great. I love this.
You know,
and little clips in, you hit me up. You're like, what route is this? I'm having a look at Shanahan playbooks.
Yeah, it was one in particular. I'm sure we'll get to that in a little bit, but just making sure I've got my terminology down on a few things. But there was some fun stuff to go through, and it's always one of my favorite series that we do every year, and we always try to drop it around this time, right after mini camp, and right as the the doldrums of the summer break kick in for those of us who are focused on the NFL.
Yeah, because there's the Packers have an open roster spot because they just got rid of Kirk Benkert and gave him an opportunity to make a roster with someone else. But until, what, late July, there's probably not going to be much Packers news, unfortunately. Yep.
Yeah, so we'll do this. We'll probably get into doing a little bit of a roster breakdown and probably a big 53-man prediction in the next couple of weeks before we lead up to training camp. So keep an eye out for that in the meantime. But you want to get into it?
Yeah, number 10, 10A.
10A.
Russell picks sixes Chicago.
Yeah, so this one comes up in week 14. It's Sunday Night Football. Packers are playing at home against Chicago. It's always that Packers Bears Lambeau night game, right? It always ends up in prime time. I think there's been one time in the last like 15 years that Packers Bears at Lambeau has been like a noon game. But this one was probably the last of Rasul's really big plays that he made. He'll make another appearance or two on the countdown as we go along here. But this was a weird game. Right. The first half was full of a bunch of defensive breakdowns. Packers gave up like a 97-yard punt return to Jakeem Grant, first half.
Yeah.
That first half just, you felt like it's slipping away. And Rasul comes up with his big pick six in the first half that kind of keeps him in and actually gives the Packers a lead for a little bit before one or two of those big touchdowns that the Bears scored before the end of the half.
The Jakeem Grant punt return hurt me.
Ugh.
Hurt me really bad because I really liked Jakeem Grant. I was a fan of him in Miami. I know like his agent and stuff too, so I guess I'm like a little biased. He's signed with Octagon, but Jakeem Grant is just like a hyper talented punt returner who pretty much can only do that at his size. And some of the things that what wasn't it the week before, like he returned a punt like out of the end zone or something? Like this guy doesn't fair catch if he has an opportunity.
I think so. I think I remember us talking about that, like leading up to that game that, just kick it deep to Jakeem because he's going to do something stupid and take it out of the end zone. And
yeah,
that one, I think he fielded it at like it was 97 yards and picked it up at the three and decides to, just
psycho
just
stuff
shred through the Packers special teams. So fun stuff. But yeah, in the middle of all this, we've got a 55-yard pick six from Rasul Douglas. It's a 3rd and 7, I think. I did the write-up for this one, but I think it was Darnell Mooney was just running a lazy out route, and Fields just kind of floats one. And, Rasul pounces. And as we know, Rasul, is not afraid to jump a route because he knows God is with him in the post.
Yeah, like that's the crazy, and I guess I have a little more to say about a different Russell play, but like he is hyper aggressive, just undercutting stuff. Like, and that's why he has pick six opportunities, mm-hmm. right? Is because on these short routes, he's just he isn't really worried about the double move. He'll just go and attack it and say like, hey, I know, you've given this to me before. I'm not going to get got twice. Like I'm going to beat you to it. And that's something that's really hard to play around because he's not playing to the scheme like a robot, I guess is kind of the best way to explain it, right? And if he's freelancing a little bit, can you trust anything? Like it's hard to trust things when it's like, okay, he's the backside of this play. Can I actually look over and throw it? Like that becomes a different calculus that the quarterback has to make in the pocket.
Yep. Yeah, and it definitely felt like this one was him picking on a rookie quarterback too, a little bit. Yeah. That throw needed to be a little farther out to the sideline. Fields kept it a little too far inside of Mooney and set it up in a perfect spot for Rasul, who was already jumping on it to just make the play.
The 10B, Crosby's walk-off winner against San Francisco. This one was a pretty big dopamine hit for me. Yeah. I just beating San Francisco, man, that means something. San Francisco and Tampa, it feels like those are the two competitors in the NFC right now that kind of have the Packers number. I know LaFleur's record, like LaFleur, what, he has two wins against San Francisco now. So it's not like he can't beat them, but
yeah, That 2020 game that he won was that was a COVID game too, and yeah. that year San Francisco's roster was just completely shredded with injuries and stuff too. So I almost write that one off as a you know as almost not even counting. So and coming off of the week one just debacle against the Saints too, you come home, beat the Lions, you're supposed to do that, and to kind of get that big jolt. And it's almost a reminder. Yeah, this is a good team. This is still a team that should and can and will beat most other teams in the NFC. I think Packers fans really needed that reminder after that Saints game 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, what a punch in the mouth that was. We didn't fire Joe Barry after the first week, though. That was nice. He ended up proving himself a little bit.
That worked out. Yeah. So. But I mean, the special teams did a good thing at the beginning of the season. Like that was great. Although to be fair, San Francisco did almost block that field goal. The guy coming around the wing came real close to getting a finger on that. So, but then the way this whole thing was set up and again, we'll preview it a little bit. We'll get to another one of those plays later, but the way that it all kind of broke down with Kyle Juszczyk getting a touchdown and just kind of barreling into the end zone with 37 seconds left, feeling like you needed to let them score to give Rodgers enough time to do something.
Yeah.
And certainly that's exactly what he did with no timeouts left.
And the other ancillary thing is that, like, what was it? It might not have been a week later, but fairly quickly, right? The Dallas Cowboys ran into the same issue at the end of a game where they were asked to – They weren't able to clock the ball after, you know, a gain fast enough. And then everyone got to point to an Aaron Rodgers play. And you're like, yeah, Mike McCarthy couldn't do it. But here's an example of Aaron Rodgers being able to operate the situation perfectly. That's always a nice bonus point, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a nice that was a feel-good moment, too, for sure.
Number nine, Crosby sets up game winner in Cincinnati.
This fucking game. Explicit tag, I'm sorry, but this freaking game was the death of me. And I know Tyler was at this game down in Cincinnati too. So yes, he was out there baking in the Southern Ohio sun. But three missed game-winning field goals between the two kickers in the last 2.5 minutes of regulation. Rodgers, after McPherson misses a 57-yarder, Rodgers just hucks one to Adams to set up the game winner at the end of regulation. I forgot about that until I, you know, read through the play-by-play again before we got on here. I completely forgot that he set that up. So Crosby misses from 36, then 51, then he misses from 40. McPherson missed from 57 at the end of regulation. And then he had the 49-yarder that he drilled and thought he hit it. And it basically goes over the upright.
Yeah, and they were celebrating, right?
Just out. Yeah, he had turned around and was off celebrating at the 50-yard line.
Yeah.
And then realizes that it goes wide left. And so finally you get, you know, a second possession or second or third possession in overtime. And Cobb makes this incredible catch over the middle to basically put you in a chip shot position instead of a spot where you're kicking another 50 plus yard field goal at the end of overtime to win it.
Yeah, that was just a nuts game. I mean, we didn't even talk about the breakdown at the end of the first half, right?
Yeah.
The Packers were able to put up, I mean, they put up, I think, something like 400 yards offensively during regulation. And then the reason that they were able to stick into this game, the Cincinnati Bengals, is because not only the field goal misses from the Packers, but also the fact that, like, they had that weird play call in the end of the first half where something rhymed or something. The way it was explained was something rhymed. So the coverage was playing coverage, but the pass rush was, like, just must rushing. Like, they were just playing contain or something when they were supposed to go back and get after Joe Burrow. So Burrow's back there patting the ball for 10 seconds. Jamar Chase just, like, teleports from the left sideline to 70 yards downfield on the right sideline. And there's someone dove for a ball and missed it. I can't remember which DB it was, but
yeah,
I think Kevin King was supposed to carry Chase and he didn't end up carrying Chase. And this was also, I believe this was the first game that Rasul was really in the lineup. So I think this, the game before was the Steelers game.
I think that was the game that he got signed, but I don't know that he actually really played much of anything in this game.
They were dabbling with Yadam.
Yes.
That's what it was. They were like, is Yadam it? And they're like, Yadam is not it. We need to figure something else out. Yeah, this game was – this firmly falls under – I know you get into a tricky situation where you just, like, throw out games, and you're like, this was not real. This game will never happen again. But this Bengals game literally will never happen again. I don't think you could get all of the situations that happened at the
same time. Well, and then on this play, I mean, we barely even talked about the Cobb play to begin with, but so he takes a pretty wicked shot over the middle on the 16 yarder, and they originally give him the first down, which, I mean, it was a third and 16 or third and 17 play, would have probably at that point run another play or two up the middle with, you know, with Dylan or something to see if you can center it a little bit or, you know, try to see if you can bust one and get in the end zone. But instead, now it's fourth and one, and you have to kick the field goal with, again, Crosby, who's missed from, you know, from short, from long, from medium range, at that end of the field, I think, as well. So that just added another level of weirdness to this, that replay reversal on the first down marker.
I also was not team kick the field goal in this situation.
you think they should have ran it up the middle on fourth and one anyway?
Look, you didn't have to run it up the middle, but I trust Aaron Rodgers to get 1 yard over Mason Crosby after he had missed three field goals. So that's how I felt in the moment. I'm happy they ended up kicking and winning, but the next play, another play from this game, Devondre Campbell's overtime pick of Joe Burrow. So this was crazy. I ended up writing this one up. It's weird because so it's the first play of overtime. Cincinnati Bengals break the huddle. They go into empty immediately. They're just like, we're throwing the ball. Like, Joe Burrow is going to be our point guard. This is what he does. He feeds Jamar Chase. Like, that's our offense basically. They go back there. It's a typical play. It's called Hoss Wide Juke. You can find a bunch of cut-ups of it on YouTube. It's what they run with Gronk a lot. So, like, think of you're an empty. The outside guys are running hitches. The inside guys, the number twos, are running seam routes. And then the third guy inside in trips is basically running, like, an option route. So, like, however the inside coverage works, he basically just runs away from that guy. So it's just an easy way to just get a couple yards, get the ball out of the quarterback's hand. The problem is, Burrow and the receiver are not on the same page at all. He throws it behind him, and then just Devondre Campbell catches it. And it feels like you just won an overtime on the first play after they won the coin toss. Obviously, it didn't work like that in terms of them winning that very next drive, but they were backed up. I mean, it felt like that was a win.
Yeah. And basically you run two plays, kick it on third down, and think that you're going to, you know, win with a 40-yard field goal. And that felt like an easy game winner right at the start of overtime, and especially off the slightly, you know, deflating. All right, we've just missed a game winner at the buzzer, and Cincinnati wins the overtime coin toss and gets the football. Just such a huge momentum shift at that point. And obviously, again, it took another, you know, 8 or 9 minutes of game clock before the Packers ended up finally putting that field goal up and winning the game.
Yeah, just
crazy.
That was also like the start, because I think that's the first week of October. That was the start of Devondre Campbell being able to post up, you know, NFC October player of the week or of the month for the defensive side. So that was nice. It was nice to see him get recognition. I still don't understand how he didn't get Pro Bowl votes. I assume that's part of like fan vote that probably kept him out a little bit, but
yeah,
I mean, the sports writers gave him all pro, right? The league gave him defensive player of the month. So
yeah, it's
kind of tough to see how he didn't get recognition. Well, I guess next year.
Thinking back on this season, it felt like that was sort of the statement play for kind of when he was putting his stamp on the defense, right? Like, I'm here, I'm going to be an impact player for this defense. He had a pick against Detroit in week two, but that was a weird, like, Monday night game. Again, it was a game that, you know, the Packers were expected to win and won pretty handily. But I think this was the statement play where he kind of stood up and said, all right, this is my defense. I'm going to be, you know, a big time guy this year.
Yeah. So. Number seven, Aaron Rodgers fakes out Jalen Ramsey. This was also a great moment.
This one is pure hilarity factor, right? Just an unbelievable, hilarious play. And to do it after the ridiculousness of Jalen Ramsey in the playoffs against Davante Adams the previous season, you know, the pre-snap motion stuff, to have Rodgers just fake him out with a pump fake to nobody, it felt that it was just so much fun.
And it's what Rodgers has been doing for 15 years. I have like a Twitter thread going on of like every single time Rodgers does this, every time he pump fakes, he's running. Mm-hmm. He's running every single time. And no one has figured this out in 15 years. Sometimes guys would, they just jump right out of their shoes. Just stay grounded. This guy likes to play games, man.
I feel like I remember a Leonard Floyd one against the Bears a couple of years ago in particular. I can't remember what year, you know, when that was, but basically, you know, same type of thing. But at least in terms of the context of this game, right, that's late in the first quarter. It's actually the first score of the game, so it puts the Packers up 7-0. Rams came in as a 2-point favorite in this game. Yeah. I had forgotten about that. Packers are coming in off a loss to Minnesota, licking their wounds a little bit. But that got the offense off to a pretty good start. And Packers would end up winning relatively handily.
Yeah, for sure. That was also when like Stafford was banged up too. Because that was when like Stafford went from playing really good to like having probably like a month of like subpar play. And it was like, oh, okay, he's banged up right now. And then obviously by the time they got to the playoffs, he was going toe to toe with Brady and everyone else. So Packers kind of got him at the right time.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, getting the win in this game, Packers ended up beating both of the Super Bowl teams in the regular season.
I know that
it's one of those things like, oh, that's great. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. And we still didn't get a playoff win.
Special
teams.
Yeah.
All right. Well, number six, MVS goes 75 yards to the house in Minnesota.
Longest play of the year. I think it was one of the only plays over 50 yards almost all season. Really felt like a season that was a little bit devoid of those really big explosive plays on offense.
Yeah.
This was such a huge response because it comes right before the 2-minute warning, right after Minnesota takes a 7-point lead, and instantly, right, Packers respond with a great route, great throw from Rodgers, and MVS does MVS things.
It's
basically running really fast. So
it's kind of crazy. Like, we know MVS is a speed demon, right? But it is kind of crazy how impactful those singular explosive plays are to his overall total. Like, he's had receptions of 74 yards in each of the last three seasons. Last year, if you take away this play, he only had 355 yards.
Jeez.
Like, it is kind of funny. Like, that is what he does, and that's kind of like the only thing that he does in certain ways.
Crazy stuff. But yeah, obviously then Packers end up losing that game, giving up a long 2-minute drive at the end of the game. So it was all for naught. After a couple of dropped picks, if I remember right, I think Savage had a
Savage had like three, it felt like.
I remember I was watching this game on my phone driving back from a curling tournament in Cincinnati, and lost my mind when MVS breaks this one. Thought that Savage had the pick in that 2-minute drive, that I think that one was the one that got overturned on replay, if I remember right, because I think it was inside of 2 minutes. Thinking the Packers had that one won and locked up. But that was a rough way to go at the end of that one, but led right into week 12 against the Rams, which worked out pretty good.
Number five, another Russell play. Russell pick sixes Stafford and Kupp. Pretty good combo, I've heard.
Yeah.
Super Bowl championship caliber, uh-huh. I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah. They put up some numbers this last season, but I think you mentioned Stafford being banged up in the middle of the season. I think that probably played into it a little bit on this play. because watching it back, it did not seem like his throw on this play had the zip that a Stafford throw normally does. Now, some of that might have been a little bit of pressure. So Preston had a really nice kind of looping edge pressure that he worked his way back to Stafford a little bit. And then Kenny kind of worked his way back from, you know, collapsing the pocket a little bit on top of him. And I think that helped a little bit. But also Stafford was staring down Cup the whole way from the snap. Campbell was stuck in basically one-on-two coverage with both Tyler Higbee and Daryl Henderson on his side of the field and nobody else to help him. And so if Stafford even looks for a split second at the other side of the field, he's got an easy first down, but instead he throws it to Cup. And again, Rasul crashing and making a great play in the ball. Just his instincts on some of those shallow routes and jump of those routes are really, really exciting, really impressive.
And this, you even have it written down, like it felt similar to the Bears play, but like, this is where it becomes really hard to even pick up Russell's tendencies because he's not consistent, right? And that might be why Stafford stared him down the entire time. The Chicago play, the Chicago pick six, it's on an out route, right?
Yep.
Cup basically runs like an out route and then like a 5 yard in. He like comes back in. They have to do it with the spacing because they're in bunch sets, even though they're in the gun and all that stuff. So I think Stafford probably stares at him because he's like, I want you to bite on the out route so that, you know, the 5 yard in is wide open. Mm-hmm. But then Rasul just stays there, doesn't bite the out route, and then picks off the fin. And it's like, how do you game plan against this guy? Like when he's just doing like, it's almost like a random number generator. And then once you're playing against a random number generator and he's biting on first or second move, he's in the quarterback's head. And Stafford probably is hurt at this point too. And kind of an underrated storyline, I think, of this offseason that I think will impact the NFC. Like Stafford's not throwing right now. Stafford's been getting shots in his shoulder since March. He still hasn't thrown. So like, I think he's probably, I mean, certainly played more games last year than he's ever played before. Plus he played through injury. Plus they're coming off of the Super Bowl. Like we'll see what the Super Bowl hangover looks like for the Rams. I mean, I think that's a very interesting situation to monitor moving forward. But this play was definitely nuts. I mean, it's Stafford, who I think was the best pocket passer in the league when he was healthy last year, throwing to Kupp, who's maybe the most automatic slot receiver we've ever seen. He wasn't in the slot on this play, I don't think. He was on the outside with the with the spacing, but he was in a bunch set, so it's like everyone's kind of playing the slot in some sort of way. Great play. And just still, like, I want to just ask Russell, like, what goes through your head? Like, I just want to walk through, like, those two plays, the Chicago play and this play. We like, what changed? Because you would have jumped one of them and you didn't jump the other.
Yep. Yeah. What are you seeing? Right. Like, what is the trigger to make that decision?
I mean, it might be down a distance, honestly. Like, it might be as simple as that.
I think there is something to that, because both of these were roughly like third and seven, third and eight plays. And so that might be part of it. Just thinking, okay, I'm going to, because in both cases, he was lined up about 12 to 14 yards deep. And then he breaks on those routes that are basically right at the sticks. So yeah, I'm sure that probably does play into it at least some point.
Number four. And this is where I think we really start getting into, like, these were all contenders for number one.
Yep.
I think in a different year, the number one is just too good, but it like last year, these all would have been contenders for number one, I think.
Yeah.
Number four, Jair covers the whole field against San Francisco. This play is great. It's an interception. He high points it on George Kittle. The San Francisco 49ers are backed up, so this gets, you know, the Packers quickly into a scoring range. Packers are playing quarters. It's pretty clear really early on that this is kind of the change, right, to Joe Barry. This is what quarters defense looks like, where no one's in your zone, post the post. And Jair just like screaming, is just running, high points George Kittle, and it ends up becoming a bracketed pass when Jimmy Garoppolo thought he had something wide open. And post is supposed to be open in quarters because you basically have that like not middle of the field safety, but like hash safety, you have him one-on-one. So if you can get inside leverage on that guy, it should be open. And then Jair just like teleports and picks it off. Love it.
Yeah, the awareness to just bail when there's nobody in your area, and then the sheer speed and athleticism that he had to chase that ball down. That's the
that high pointed Kittle. Kittle has more than a half a foot on Jair. Yeah.
Just absolutely insane. So definitely that one 100% falls under the incredible individual effort and performance category. And yeah, that one very easily could have been, you know, a number one play contender.
I'm really happy we got this Jair play, because I do think we probably would have gotten a couple of edge lords that would have been like, I don't know, how good is Jair anyway? Like if a year off from injury, then getting the big deal. I think if we don't have this play, we get a couple people chirping like, I don't know, is the Jair deal a good thing? And it's like, stop. This guy's amazing. He high-pointed the number one tight end in the league. Get out of here. Awesome. Number three.
Same game again.
Yep. Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams over the middle to set up Mason Crosby winner in San Francisco. That play was nuts. I mean, you have ball placement over Fred Warner's fingertips. I mean, right over. Like, you might have been able to fit, like, certainly less, like, a couple cards between the ball and his fingers.
There's three plays to me that just illuminate Rodgers' ball placement, right? It's the one in the Super Bowl, threading the needle to Jennings. It's the ear hole shot on Eric Kendricks against Minnesota from a couple years ago. And then it's this one.
Yeah.
This is right up there with those other two.
And Warner, right? Like, again, if we're talking about like not just who Green Bay is on the field, but like level of competition out there. We were talking about, you know, Jair high pointing the top tight end in the league. Like, Fred Warner is the best coverage linebacker in football. And he is absolutely insane. I mean, Fred Warner was doing some things in that first game for San Francisco that was just nuts. I mean, he was blowing up a lot of these runs. So he was making his impact felt, and for the game winner to go right over him was pretty nice too.
Yeah. Well, and then they get down, spike the ball, and you're still at that point only about the 50-yard line, and Rodgers does follow it up with another one up the left sideline to Adams. I think that one, I'm trying to remember that play, but I feel like they just kind of left him open in the hole up the sideline in the cover two hole. And he just, you know, puts a nice, easy back shoulder throw up the sideline and you're good to go. And out comes Crosby for the game winner.
Great win. I think that's maybe the best I felt of any win during the regular season. I guess they didn't win in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's that emotional lift after that week one. You know, you need the
and the first half of week two too. I mean, they were struggling against the Lions. Jared Goff was just back there patting the ball, and they were like, "We gotta change something up. Like, we gotta get a defensive stop at some point."
Yep, I think the game for our number two play is probably second on that list to the San Francisco game for me. So, play number two, Rasul locking it up with a pick against Arizona, his old team, sitting on their practice squad 3 weeks earlier, and the Packers go out and get him after failing to get Stephon Gilmore in a trade after the Jair injury. So they get, I think, didn't they sign Quentin Dunbar too, like randomly off the street? I think they just, at that point, they're throwing shit at the wall to see what sticks. Yeah. And so grabbing Rasul, grabbing Dunbar, and to have him come up and, like you mentioned, you know, he had a little bit of snaps, I think in that Washington, maybe in the Chicago game, the 2 weeks earlier, but this was, I think, really the game where they realized, okay, this guy might have something. Obviously, Adams not it. And he played most of this game. And I mean, Packers did it with no receivers.
None. Basically. Everyone had COVID at this point.
Juwan Winfrey was, I don't know if he was the leading receiver, but I mean, he got probably 30 plus snaps in that game.
Yeah, because he was getting more snaps than Malik or even Amari Rodgers at that point.
So. Right. And then just this play with Arizona coming down by 3 points, you know, all they have to do would be sail it out the back of the end zone, kick the field goal. At least you're going to overtime. But for Rasul to come up with this pick against the team that, you know, that had him a couple of weeks earlier in that situation, was just incredible. And that was, I mean, that really was obviously what kicked off the story of Rasul Douglas this year. And then those pick sixes just add to it. But yeah, this was the one that started it all.
I mean, it felt like a sports movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like this had to have been the greatest moment of Rasul Douglas's career. Right. And then being able to turn to the home crowd, right? The lady in the Cardinals jersey just slumped over the end zone wall. And he's like, I just won and I beat my former team. You didn't believe in me. They did. Thursday night football. At this point, the Cardinals were undefeated too, right? They were the last undefeated team in the NFL. So, yeah, this was a great game. This was really fun to watch. It also falls under the category of this will never happen again with, like, all the weird stuff. Because I wasn't. I think JJ was like banged up or hurt. I can't remember what was going on.
Yeah. That. I think that was while he was out with like a torn biceps or something. And he came back in like week 17 or something like that.
Yeah. So there was just a lot of stuff happening on both sides that it was like, obviously Juwan Winfrey is not going to start another NFL game on purpose, but that was nice for it to end on a Rasul Douglas pick, him look turning at the crowd and just being like, I just conquered this whole stadium, and being able to like look at the sideline and be like, Cliff Kingsbury, eat my butt.
Well, that was a tough game too from a losses perspective, right? I mean, Tonyan goes down with a torn ACL. You lose Kylin Hill with a torn ACL on the kickoff return. You've got all these guys out with COVID, and so you're already down to a skeleton crew on offense. And you're kind of working the same way at the quarterback unit at that point. And to emerge from that, knocking off the only remaining undefeated team in football, basically pulling even with them at 7-1, getting that tiebreaker. Like I said, short of that San Francisco game, I think this was the next best like emotional point of the season for me.
Yeah. And then number one, I still own you. Just the pettiest thing I think I've ever seen in my life. Just trampling the Chicago Bears in Soldier Field after the game. Aaron Rodgers says, like, I don't think this is my last one. And you're like, he's coming back. I told you, he's coming back. This isn't going to end ever. We're never going to die. This is great.
It's just so perfect, right? Like this fan base, this Chicago fan base that has known nothing but pain when it comes to Green Bay quarterbacks for the last 30 years, and just drive that stake in a little bit farther, right? It doesn't get any better than that.
What people don't realize about punching down, it's fun.
Yeah,
it's fun. People forget it's fun. Like I like to do it to Lions fans for a long time, but now the Lions are like kind of fun. I'm still happy they didn't take away my Bears. And it seems like the Bears, I still own you thing, it might last another administration, a full administration. Because I think after seeing this general manager work, I think they're just going to fully ruin Justin Fields. I think they're going to do it. They got the quarterback that I didn't want them to get because I thought he was going to be good. And I think they're going to ruin it before they can fix it.
They're the best receiver they're going to give this guy in his first 2 years in the NFL is Darnell Mooney. Who's like, let's be fair, Darnell Mooney's not a bad player.
He's fine.
But the best guy,
as much as I did when I was in eighth grade.
And the best you're going to give him in the offseason is a 25-year-old rookie? Come on.
And the fact that, and not to pile on the Bears too much, but let's pile them on them more. The fact that Sean McVay was like willing to give Allen Robinson that contract means he thinks like Allen Robinson basically just quit on that team. Because there's no way you watch Allen Robinson even on film last year and you're like, yeah, that guy warrants that type of a deal. So he thinks like Allen Robinson was holding stuff back. So I guess, I mean, we'll see. I saw like Tevin Jenkins, the guy they drafted in the second round, who like theoretically at this point probably should be their like best potential bookend for this upcoming season, was getting looks at like second string offensive line.
Yeah.
Like, yo, you can't miss. Like, you're not swinging enough to be able to miss on guys like this.
Yeah.
I love it.
Fun stuff. Yeah. That's like I said, that's as good as it gets. And it never gets old, Pylon and the Bears. We did it a little bit. Paul had one this week. It was a fun one. Talking about the Bears' distinct lack of receivers who have played well against the Packers over the years. So give that a look if you have a few minutes. But
I can't think, like, who's the best Bears receiver we've seen? Alshon?
I mean, in the last 25 years, probably. Based on stats against the Packers, Curtis Conway, 90s.
That's never good.
Mid-90s, but that's going. Great. It's going back. I mean,
in my lifetime, you'd think
honestly, in your lifetime, it's Matt Forte. He has the most most receptions against Green Bay of any Bears player in the last. Actually, that might be in history. Yep,
he's their Jerry Rice. So. Yeah,
but just want to take a real quick look back. So this year, number one, I Still Own You. The number ones the last couple years. It's been a little bit all over the place. So last year we ended up picking the Za'Darius Smith sack strip of Taysom Hill in the Saints game. That Sunday night game early in the season when, for whatever reason, why can't I think of Sean Payton's name for a second there?
He's retired out of sight.
Yeah.
Out of mind.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Peyton putting Taysom Hill in randomly and, you know, for a snap at quarterback in the fourth quarter and Z coming up with the big turnover. Going back to 2019, it was Rodgers' miracle touchdown to Jamal Williams in the back corner of the end zone against Kansas City.
Yeah.
And then let's keep piling on the Bears. 2018 was Randall Cobb, week one.
Yes.
My knee.
Yeah. Shot up so much he got a southern accent.
So yeah, that's two out of 4 years that the Bears are on the receiving end of our pick for the number one play of the Packers season.
Well, we got them week two, Lambeau, yep, night game. Hopefully we can get another one in this next year.
That'd be fun. That'd be a good one.
I'm excited. Some stuff on the site recently. I wrote up a piece about Josh Nyman and how we basically don't know how he can play at right tackle.
Yeah.
I have all of his plays in pass protection at right tackle he's had in his Packers career. It took a minute and 10 seconds. It's not long. It's certainly something to watch out for. It's the thing I'm going to be paying attention to the most for training camp and stuff. And then I also wrote a piece about Tyler Davis and kind of broke down his Baltimore game, which is easily the best game that he had in terms of like the grading companies and stuff like that. So I think Tyler Davis is like gonna start games. Like he might start six games for the Packers this year. And Tyler Davis, you might be wondering, who the hell is Tyler Davis? I've never heard that name before. He's a tight end from UConn who transferred to Georgia Tech. Came from a quarterback background, pretty athletic for his size, picked up off of the Colts practice squad last year, drafted by the Jaguars, only spent a year there. And now he's getting some film as a true Y who can kind of do a little bit more pass catching stuff than Mercedes Lewis. So I think he's kind of in that role versus, you know, Taguara, who's kind of like an off tight end and stuff. And until Tanya comes back, like we're going to have question marks of like, who's going to go out there on third down? Because we got some DeGuara plays last year, and it wasn't great. So adding competition there would be nice.
Yeah, and Davis was a core special teams guy for most of last season, mm-hmm, too. So sounds like Bisaccia already mentioned him in one of his pressers. Seems like he really likes what he brings to the table on teams as well. So certainly think he's, you know, going to be tight end two, tight end three, on this roster, even when Tonyan returns, based on everything that we've heard so far. So he'll be interesting to watch, and we'll break down the tight end position a little more, like I said, now in the next couple of weeks as we start working through our roster previews and 53-man predictions. So we gotta get working on that.
Yeah, I think I'll get bored at some point and break down Sean Davis, because I think he also is going to be a guy who's going to get playing time. He's the third safety
three in the offseason. Yep.
Yep. Free Ennis Gaines, though. I will say, yes. Ray Wilborn, old friend of the podcast, Ray Wilborn is moving up the depth chart at inside linebacker. I think he can play football.
Nice. So
Big Ray Wilborn, big Ennis Gaines. I don't know when we're going to have another podcast. I guess whenever some news breaks, whenever we get that 90th signing. Julio Jones, please.
Don't get me excited.
Go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go.